Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Throw a step blocked by Jaylen Brown.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics
Over the
Show.
Shoulder pass for Al Horford with a two-hand slam.
With Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Final 5 seconds. We'll see if Tatum will shoot again, looking for a 40-point game. He launches a three. It's no good, and that's how it will end. As the Celtics somehow hang in the game for 47 minutes, despite giving up a franchise record 27 threes. A wild night. Celtics beaten by a final of 137-130.
You know, I feel like we gave ourselves a chance to, you know, to win the game there. You know, we just, for some reason, early on, they started out hot. We got into them defensively a little bit, and I think that helped us. But they just outpaced us. Obviously, we want to win the game. Offensively, we can look at it and take some positives from it because we were probably our best offensive game.
Al Horford, after last night's 137-130 loss to the Utah Jazz, the Celtics start up their West Coast road swing. Sports Hub Celtics Show with Jim Murray, Chris Gaspria, Brian Robb of Mass Live as well, covering the Celtics. Good to have you back, B-Rob. It's been a minute. I feel like I haven't seen you in like a month.
Missed you guys.
Yeah, missed you too. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. It should come as no surprise when I say this, Chris. You know, my default is after a loss, you come in, you rip the team, whoever it is. I'm typically not moral victory guy.
Yeah.
But as this ended late last night, I was like, that sucked, but, you know, that was fun.
Like, it was a great game.
It was a great game, and it was a strange loss. Again, my default is, you sons of bitches, I'm going to rip you. But you shoot over 51% from the floor, 50 points in the paint, and you get Rudy Gobert on the other side. It's one of the best rim protectors in the NBA. It was just kind of like a freak thing with Utah. You heard there from Sean Grandy. You hit 27 threes, 27-51 on three-pointers. Yeah. What the hell are you going to do?
Like, yeah, there's not much, and especially some of the ones late. And Mike Conley was 7-for-7. Donovan Mitchell hit one that I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, just a step back. But, you know, again, I'm not going to rip them. But I would just say that this is a team whose calling card is defense. And yes, you don't expect a team to shoot 27-51 from three. But the way that Utah moved the basketball, they're one of the best, I think, movement teams in the league. And they created a lot of those open looks. Now, more of them went down than normally would. But just as you're talking about, hey, you know, the Celtics got all these points in the paint and they put Rudy Gobert in pick and rolls and they got all these mid-range shots. They made Rudy Gobert look silly. I think the Jazz took one of the best defensive teams in the league and the Celtics and picked them apart.
Yeah, so you want to, look, this is what we do. You want to pick nits. This is what we do. You should do it as a fan as well, a little more often. Everything's not, sunshine, roses, and puppy dogs. I'm getting annoyed with Dennis Schroeder. I almost want to make it into a shirt. I said it the other night in the win over the 76ers, hashtag too much Schroeder. I think he's involved too much late in games offensively. I think he's a bad turnover waiting to happen. Like, I think he's featured a little bit too prominently.
He had a good night last night. Obviously, he missed that layup late, which was kind of a killer.
Much like the game against the Sixers.
I know. I mean, he is good at, he is, you know, it's nice down the stretch to have people, especially when Jaylen Brown's out, guys other than Tatum who can create their own shot, and I think that's why they trust Schroeder. I mean, it's like you said, it's really hard to fault them a ton in this loss. I would like to see more of the offense that they showed, but I think Utah is sort of a good model for them when you look at it. Just the way the Jazz move without the basketball and the way that they're able to create for each other. And also, there was like a part of that game, you know, I hope Jason Tatum was paying attention, and he had a great night, but there was a part of that game where everything was really running through Conley. There's a lot of alley-oops to Gobert. And, like, Donovan Mitchell's, like, not even really touching the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But then they go back to him, and he gets it done. And it's like sometimes you have to have that part of the game where you're not a huge factor. And Tatum threw a fantastic pass in the second half on the baseline to Marcus Smart. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
So he played so well. But I'm just saying, like, I think that's something maybe he can learn from with Donovan Mitchell of the offense can run through other people sometimes. And you can be a decoy. I think Ime's talked about this, but then we'll come back to you. Like, when it's crunch time, you're still our guy. We're going to go to you.
Yeah, Tatum's night last night, also, I thought, kind of weird. I thought he did a very good job attacking the paint, but what was his numbers from three?
Two of 11.
Two of 11, so
that's been a season-long thing.
I know. And also, you know, the assists are down, the rebounds were down. This was a little bit of my concern. Like, okay, so the shot's starting to drop again, and he's playing better offensively, but that stuff that we've liked in recent games where, you know, his scoring isn't what we're used to. Those other numbers are up. I had a feeling like, you know, okay, the shots start to drop. What's going to happen with the assists and the rebounds? I think you saw that last night. I thought he was good last night. Good, not great.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was borderline great. I really enjoyed watching him play last night. I mean, I thought he was in the zone and in his bag. And I know the three wasn't falling, but he was taking it to, I liked he was attacking the hoop. He shot 11 free throws.
Well, that I'd love to see more. Yeah. And what was he, 7 for 7 on free throws? No.
11 for 11.
Yeah. Sorry. That's good. I want to see him attack more, but he does. He falls in love with that three.
Yeah. Can I just bring this up because I know we'll get to it eventually? Obviously, Marcus Smart was a -17.
Yeah. So for those who maybe haven't had a chance to read your column with Chris Gasper back with the Boston Globe, he's coming home. A couple of great columns this week. He weaves the web about the Belichick thing. Oh, you want to give Belichick credit? Well, then, you realize you can't talk about Mac Jones all that much. And he twists his evil mustache. And then you are ready to ship Marcus Smart out of town, shake it all up. I'm with you on that 100%. In fact, I agree with both of these columns. Has there been blowback? Have you got blood?
I'd say the Smart column is very polarizing. Some people agree, but the Marcus Smart stands are first of all, none of them seem to actually pay for Globe subscriptions, so they don't read the story. But also, they're very, very upset with me. Very, very angry about this column.
Yeah, so they just read the title and
I mean, look, I'll just give you the cliff notes of it. I don't think this core is currently constituted with Tatum, Brown, and Smart is going anywhere in terms of winning a championship. I think, again, at the time I wrote it, they had played, and I know there have been injuries to guys, but they had played 100 games going back to last season, including the playoffs and the play-in game, and we're 50-50. I just don't see this roster as currently constituted being capable of contending in the East, so you have to break it up. And it's not an indictment of Marcus Smart. It's just he's the most obvious guy to go out of the three in terms of, do you want to move on from Jason Tatum? I doubt Celtics fans want to do that. Do you want to move on from Jaylen Brown? Maybe some Celtics fans want to do that, but you have to acknowledge it's going to be difficult to get value considering the steal that is Jaylen Brown's contract for an all-star. So then you have to go to Smart, who is sort of by default the most obvious guy you take out of that core. And he's not totally responsible for where the team's at. I'm not putting all the blame on him. However, I look at it and say, here's a guy who they're asking to take a back seat. And anytime you ask him to take a back seat, he's going to be a backseat driver. And I just don't think overall the talent warrants having to keep him on this team and trying to just find a way to hammer a round peg into a square hole or square peg into a round hole, whatever it is, of making this team a contender with what you have. I just don't think it's going to work. So you have to shake it up. And he's the other part of it is, Jim and B-Rob, it's like, well, who could you move that actually has value and that another team would take? There's not a lot of options.
What would that do for their trajectory this year? Because I'm with you on this 100%. Like that they gave him that extension is just madness to me. This thing is, I've said it now for a while, how the Celtics have trended has looked like a ski slope for three straight seasons.
Oh, I like that.
Right. That's down. Feel free to steal that.
Use
that.
Yeah, I'm using that.
What would that do for them this year if they shook it up and got rid of Smart?
They'd be worse. But I also sort of look at it and say, it's the whole what's the definition of insanity? Like
doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
I mean, I just feel like this core, I feel like they're maxed out, and this does not look like a contending team to me. But I could be wrong.
All right, we'll get Brian Robb's perspective on Gasper's incendiary column, which side he falls on, because I know that it's not just fans. I know that there's been some that cover the team. And like, oh, Gasper, you, ooh.
I know.
Let's get him out of town. How dare you write such
boo.
A thing? Marcus Smart, boo,
boo. I'm like, are you saying Boo Earns or boo?
I was saying Boo Earns. 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on last night's game? I want to rip them, but it was entertaining. So moral victory-ish for the Celtics last night, kind of, sort of, as they lose to Utah. 617-779-0985. Back next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
1 hour each week at noon on Saturdays. The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Network.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics
Keep
Show.
Three. Got it.
With Gaspard Murray on 98.5 of the Sports Hub.
With Tatum on the wing against Mike Conley. He wants Richardson to move away from that corner because Tatum's going to drive there, spin back to his right, and lay it off the window and in. And nobody in a black uniform had any idea which way Tatum was going.
The thing about it, who can stop who in this game? If I'm them, they're going right back to, they should be going back to this pick and roll with Conley.
Sports Up Celtics Show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Brian Robb back with us as well. And you, if you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Thought it was a really, really good performance by Jason Tatum. Good, not great. As the Celtics fell to Utah last night, 137-130. I just thought he took too many threes. Like, again, when you're as proficient as he was in the paint last night, just keep doing that. And this might be silly, but hey, whatever. I mean, it's a Saturday, and I'm a goof. The muscle he's put on this year, right? Like, so I thought,
yeah.
I know a lot of people thought going into this year, like, you know, now that he's like Diesel, he'll be going into the paint more. Hadn't been that way, but he did last night, so good. Is there any way possible, you know, because he was more svelte, the three was just felt like he was more proficient with it prior to this, putting on the muscle. Do you think maybe that there's been a detriment there? Like, he's now that he's yoked, like, he can't hit the three that he used to the way he used to?
I had not thought of that. I mean, his shot still looks the same, and he still makes some of these pull-up shots. I mean, he still has a pretty stroke. I think he's just going through one of those stretches, but I that had not occurred to me. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like his mechanics or his stroke really look all that different.
Yeah, I don't know. Just thinking out loud, that's all. B-Rob, what'd you make of this last night? Good loss, moral victory, or one that they should have had and you're angry about it?
I go on the moral victory side of things with the – prefacing that saying, if they lose tonight in Portland, then that goes out the window. Because it's nice to, you know, play toe-to-toe of one of the best offenses in the NBA right now. But if you can't take care of business against a team that you need to win on this road trip for it to be successful, then it goes nowhere. So, and to your guys' point on Tatum, that you're just hitting on just now, I think an issue that has kind of flown under the radar, where do you think he ranks right now in minutes, guys, in the NBA per game?
I'm going to guess he's in the top three.
Second.
Oh, wow.
Second overall, averaging almost 37 minutes a game. So when you look at the percentages and why he's maybe settling too much, to your point, Jim, in a lot of these games, I think the first quarter last night was a perfect example of that. You know, Ime's riding him hard right now, and he kind of has to, obviously, to win games, but sure. That's, I think, the push and pull of the situation.
All right, so yeah, maybe it's a fatigue issue or something
like
that. Okay. And what do you make of Gasper's column? Now back with the Boston Globe, are you ready to ride him out of town because he dared to say they need to break this up and ship out Marcus Smart?
Coming out hot, Gasper. Love it. Congrats again on being back. So, yeah, I feel like we've had this conversation for 2 or 3 years in this show.
We have.
So, like, there's clearly nothing I disagree with in Gasper's column. You know, is Smart a good player on this team? Right. Yes. In the right role. Is this the right role for him? The starting point guard when there's not enough of a supporting cast around Tatum and Brown. That's the bigger question mark. And that's what you said. If you're going to shake things up, I think Smart's the obvious place to look. And the question is now, I mean, they signed him to this 4-year extension and Brad Stevens won't be making any moves in the next month or two until, you know, the trade deadline gets closer and more guys are eligible to be dealt. But, you know, Smart shooting 39% from the field and 30% from three. So even, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, we should move him. The other thing is like, oh, what are you actually able to move him for? And is he, how much value does he retain with those numbers?
So let me ask you, that's what I wanted to ask you. Like around the, because I know from the Marcus Smart stance that people think very highly of him here. And I understand why. How is he regarded by the rest of the league? And is he maybe overrated here in Boston to a degree that people don't realize because they don't know how player personnel evaluators in the rest of the league look at Marcus Smart?
I think it's fair to say that the Celtics value him more highly here than around league. He has strong value around league. Defensively, I mean, his reputation is legitimate. Like, he is an all-NBA first, second team guy. He took a step back there last year, but he's still, I think he's been back to that level this year with a top five defense that we're seeing from the Celtics. But is that worth $15, $17, $20 million per year for the next 4 years for a guy that's entering his late 20s and you kind of know what he is at this point? There's no upside intrigue there. Smart is Smart, and he can be a very valuable piece in the right role, and some contender could surely use him, but are they going to have what the Celtics want? And that's going to be the interesting thing to look at as we get closer to trade time in the next month or two.
Yeah, I mean, I freely acknowledge by moving him, you might not get back what you feel is full value, and you might take a step back. But I also think it could be sort of addition by subtraction in terms of now you're finally and fully turning the team over, I think, to Tatum and Brown without Big Brother sort of looking over their shoulder.
And I'll put it to both of you. I mean, to Jim, do you feel like that? I mean, we saw, obviously, his comments like a month ago to Tatum and Brown. Is that something you feel like, is that water under the bridge at this point? Or do you think like that stuff will bubble over again, you know, in a month or two?
As someone who dabbles in pettiness, again, that whole thing, it was the right message by the wrong messenger. If I'm Tatum and Brown, and I've always looked at Marcus Smart as, okay, good teammate, but like you're not on our level in terms of talent, so shut your effing mouth. I'm holding on to that in terms of pettiness. And I know deep down if like you screw up or you cost us a game, I'm going to bring it up again and be an a-hole about it because you were an a-hole about it first.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, those guys, everything I hear, those guys get along really well off the court. So I don't know how that will linger, if those guys will take it as a slight. But I think it speaks to sort of the fact that he's in the wrong role, not only when it comes to on the court in terms of being the third star, but really just in the organization as being like a vocal leader. He should be like a lead by example guy, a guy that's like, oh my God, this guy plays the hardest and he does this. But he's not someone you need to come out and say things publicly, vocally. And he really should not feel empowered to talk about the team's stars like that publicly. He shouldn't. But he does, because he's the longest tenured Celtic, and that means something, particularly when you're talking about an organization like the Boston Celtics. And again, this is the other part of it. You know, he was the number six pick in the draft. And say what you want about his career in terms of what he's accomplished and what he's become and how valuable he is, but I don't think anybody looks at it and says, number six pick in the draft, we hope, is one of the best role players in the league. So I think he looks at himself and he's like, why was the number six pick in the draft? Like, I'm supposed to be like a, you know, all-star, borderline all-star caliber guy. And I think that's how he carries himself and how he looks at himself. And I think the organization lets him carry himself that way. And I think ultimately that is a detriment, as much of a detriment as his outside shooting, to the progress of this team towards being a championship contender.
I agree with that. I'll give him this, though. Ever since that debacle in Dallas, where he obviously gave that foul at the end of the game a few days after, you know, throwing Brown and Tatum under the bus, he's played his role well in this last month here. And that, again, this, it's only a month. We have a much longer sample size to look at. But if he continues like this, when you're Brad Stevens, they signed all these extensions to like Richardson, and they obviously have Schroeder on a 1-year deal. They have a lot of different ways they could go to shake this thing up. So if he continues to, you know, stay in his lane, if you will, then I'm more intrigued there. But to Chris's point, if not, like, based on the tracker and based on where he thinks he stands in the hierarchy here, you know, that's obviously a place you're going to have to naturally look.
And here would be my other point, too. And maybe I'm wrong on this. You know, maybe they have more to trade than I think. But part of my calculus for the column was, well, you know, Peyton Pritchard's not playing. Langford and Aaron Nesmith are inconsistent minutes guys and contributors, so they haven't really pumped up their trade value. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm overlooking what the trade value would be for Schroeder or Josh Richardson, and maybe there is another way to shake up the team. You know, but my calculus is I think Smart has value because that contract, even though we don't like it, it's not a horrible contract. It will age well, and he can bring a lot to a contending team, as B-Rob said. And also, I think it's addition by subtraction in terms of getting more from Tatum and Brown once he's gone. I fully acknowledge, like, little picture, Smart's been playing well. He's not the problem. You know, big picture, I don't think they're a contender. But I would also go back little picture and say, as well as he's playing, do you think it's manifested itself in significantly improved offense other than last night for the team?
Nope, they're 24th in the NBA in offense.
No, they're just another middler. And this is the other thing, too. Like, after that win over the 76ers the other night, like, you know, on Felger and Maz, Mike came in and was like, ah, they should be better than this. And it's like, I get it, Mike, but like, and I know a lot of people feel this way too, but no, this is kind of what they are. This is the way they've been for a while. They're just another Eastern Conference middler, which in a lot of ways is the worst place you can be in the NBA.
Agreed.
617-779-0985. I know we have yet to get to your calls. You see all stacked up. You want to talk about Marcus Smart, this game last night, was it a moral victory? All that, we will, I promise, get to your calls next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on the home of the Seas, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's time to talk Celtics.
Man, how did the fish grease them?
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Niang floats it to the top of the circle. Tobias Harris guarded by Horford down to 4 seconds. Horford puts the body on it. Harris turning, floats it into the corner. Shot is in the air, blocked, and the Celtics have won the ballgame. They could never get it near Joel Embiid.
Was that Al Horford that came up?
It was. A brilliant performance by Al Horford from start to finish against his former team. And the Celtics score 88 and win.
Still in one.
The best defense in the Eastern Conference over the last month does it in a high-profile game. And the Celtics go to two games over 500. The final score, Boston 88, Philadelphia 87.
Sports Up Celtics Show. We're at 98.5 of Sports Up. That's the final call of the last home game, the win against the 76ers. And what was that, Wednesday night? Wednesday night. Which I thought was good for them, you know?
Good win.
Yeah, you know, and on Felger and Maz the following day, Mike was like, wow, we're going to kick the crap out of them. That wasn't that good. Like, this is what they are, Mike. Like, you know, for a lot of people that think, like, the ceiling should be higher, maybe. But, like, for right now, for what they are, that's a good win for them. You know, the Sixers are just like them. They're a middling Eastern Conference team.
I think the one thing about the win that frustrated me, though, was that on a night where Joel Embiid is really like a non-factor, 3 of 17, I think he started 1 of 13, that's where you get a little frustrated, and that's where I understand where Mike's coming from in terms of, okay, why did it have to come down to Rob Williams making that great play at the end? Because it wasn't like Tyrese Maxey had it going either. You know, really, it was sort of a slog and a struggle when maybe it shouldn't have been on your home court when your defense is playing that well and you're really, you know, making Embiid a non-factor, you think you would be able to get a little more separation from the Sixers. I think that's probably where Mike's coming from.
Well, in that end of that game is another one of the reasons I say, like, we're seeing too much Schroeder. Like, why does he have the ball this late in the game? And you're trying to take this, like, you know, the dagger shot when you should be facilitating more because that's your job. And I feel like what's happened there is that game against Milwaukee, going back about a month ago, the shorthanded Milwaukee game, which was a nice win, but, you know, Schroeder had almost like 40 points, whatever it was, 38. And I feel like that was the game where it's like, oh, I, too, can be a shooter on this team. And he got that Marcus Smart disease. And it's like, no, dude, no, this isn't your role here.
Yeah, I know you're getting frustrated. I think, you know, again, Schroeder is what he is. He's a sort of an instant offense-first point guard who you can either bring off the bench or have as, like, a fifth starter. And that's his game. And you have to sort of live with the ups and downs of what Dennis Schroeder is. And relative to the contract, he's good. But he is one of the guys, other than Tatum and Brown, who can get his own shot. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's bad.
First up here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show this afternoon, Elliot in Boston. Hey, Elliot.
Hey, guys. I don't know if I'm nitpicking, but, I mean, this whole season I just haven't been impressed with anything Ime Udoka has done, win or loss. Regardless of Marcus Smart, I just don't feel like it should be this hard for the talent that's been acquired in this team to play consistent and good basketball. I mean, Udoka doesn't impress me in his press conferences. All he does is read off sheets. You know, Scalabrine trashes him all game. I don't know. No out-of-timeout plays have impressed me. I think you seriously whiffed on the coach because just like players, when it comes to the coaches, you either got it or you don't. And on the eye test, there's nothing that he's done that's telling me that he's going to be a good head coach. You're not going to be able to get rid of this guy this year. And, you know, we're talking about Smart. I think there's a bigger problem here at hand with this team. And as far as, you know, this year, Udoka's done nothing to say that was a good hire.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a little early on Ime. I understand what you're saying, and it's difficult to have a rookie head coach when you had Brad Stevens. But I would just say this. A lot of his laments and complaints are identical to the ones that Brad Stevens had. So is the issue the coach? Or is the issue the mix?
I think the mix. I don't know. Like, I think that they've been better defensively, and they've bought in his defensive system.
Yeah, and early on, they weren't. Remember, they were having issues with the switching?
Yeah.
And I don't know, B-Rob, have they done less switching, or is it just better communication now?
I think it's both.
Okay.
But they definitely have scaled back the amount of switching they were doing. Like that those Knicks early games where, you know, Fournier and Kemba were getting wide open threes, and then overtime, like they've adjusted that with some of their bigs, I think, which has helped. And so learning that has definitely come a long way. But I think with Ime, the question is long term in terms of like how much buy in he's going to get. And we're seeing it defensively now, but I think he was brought in a lot just to be able to have that rapport with the players. And that is obviously there so far, but that's not really going to, we're going to find out a lot during this month when the schedule is an absolute gauntlet. Like, are they going to be able to hang in when the adversity hits, or are they going to, you know, fall into old bad habits and look like more of the same, to Chris's point?
Joe and Lincoln on last night's game. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, well, I'm a Marcus Smart defender and a Jason Tatum trasher a little bit. So let me explain. So first of all, I think at the end of the game, the difference between Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum, it's like Jimmy Butler a couple of years ago with the Heat. Donovan Mitchell wasn't a big factor all the game, but at the end, when they needed to make shots, he made just about every single shot. I have no faith that Jason Tatum is the guy who's going to always make the great shot at the end. Marcus Smart, on the other hand, as crappy a shooter as he is, when there's a big shot to be made, I would love if, I don't know if B-Rod has those clutch shots from Marcus Smart throughout his career. I'll bet it's a lot better than his ordinary shooting. And I just love watching him play. I mean, the championships are not everything to me. Enjoying watching the games is part of it. That's why I used to love watching those Bridgie teams, and Jim Murray, you know, made fun of me for that. They're fun. Marcus Smart, it's just, what position does he play? My friend and I say he plays the Marcus Smart position.
Yeah.
He just is a unique player, and I love watching him. And, yeah, I wish he didn't, you know, I wanted to see the good Marcus all the time, not the bad Marcus. He's more of the good Marcus this year, I think. So I just don't know if Tatum's the guy who's going to lead you to the, quote, next level. And okay, that's it.
Thanks, no, Joe. I understand what you're saying, and I, at least you're honest about it, saying I just enjoy watching the guy play. And you're right, he is unique. And this sort of takes me back to Rondo a little bit, and that people oftentimes conflate unique for great or elite. Marcus Smart's a unique player. There's no one like him in the NBA. And Rondo was the same way at the height of his powers. But then people take that, and they take that unique element and turn it into something it's not.
And by the way, caller, I have since made my apology to you and the lovers of the Bridgies and the Bridgie Celtics. Well, I was incredibly hard on them at the time. We knew what the ceiling was. Ultimately, in terms of a viewing product, I was wrong. Like, it was, because at least they gave you max effort night in, night out, unlike the ski slope Celtics of the last 3 years that just go down.
I have a question for you guys, though, based off that guy's caller. Do you have any reservations about Tatum as the guy moving forward? Is there anything you've seen this year that gives you pause about that?
Yeah. I mean, the what do people usually go to? He could be Carmelo Anthony. If that's what his ceiling is, like, I'm good. You want to move on from him? I would meet it with a shrug. Some people would be apoplectic about it. If that's what he is, he can get a really good return and, you know, you restart. Fine. I can live with it.
I'm not worried until, if he goes for a full 3/4 of the season like this, that's when I start worrying. For a 20-game sample size, I'm not there yet.
What did you make of his comments the other day? And I'm not going to ask, you know, I don't want to, you know, ambush B-Rob here, so I'll just read it. But when he said, you know, I seen a report the other day that said I was a selfish player, that seems pretty unselfish of me. When he's talking about basically, I think the question was from John Corrales about letting Schroeder, you know, do his thing, which you love so much in the fourth quarter. What did you think of Tatum's response to that?
I don't think it was the best thing. Like, yeah, you should, of course, be okay with your teammate, like, making a play in that situation. So the way that I think he was kind of doing it, like, the tone was kind of interesting there in terms of saying, like, I don't think you should necessarily pat yourself on the back for that.
I would agree
given the situation, but he's been coming under attack this year, whether it's, you know, teammates at times or obviously there's this article, so I can see him getting defensive about it. But yeah, like, that he should naturally be fine serving as a decoy in those situations when his, you know, he's shooting just 39% from the field in the fourth quarter this season. It hasn't always gone well with him with the ball in his hands.
Johnny in Brooklyn on Marcus Smart, conversation we were having earlier. Go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, hey guys, thanks so much for taking my call. And, you know, you guys joke around sometimes about guys having damning photos of someone and that's why they get their playing time or their contract. To me, if that's not what played a part in Marcus Smart's extension, I really can't put my finger on it. I wanted to ask you guys, did you hear, Forsberg's a friend of the show, so I'll go easy on him, but last night he and you got to say what you're paid to say. He came on and said that Marcus Smart and Rob Williams analytically are in the top 10 of an NBA duo or some complete nonsense like that. And I mean, guys, that's like saying Jackie Bradley Jr. is a good baseball player. Like, what are we talking about?
But
and so, yeah, I just want to get your opinion.
Yeah, Johnny, just quickly, from an analytics standpoint, that might be true. I mean, you know, no matter what sport we're talking about nowadays, like, you can find some number to justify whatever the hell you're trying to.
I will say they are very good on the pick and roll and the alley-oop. Like, those alley-oops are, but it was like the other night against the Sixers. In the first half, it was amazing. And then Smart took it too far, and he started, like, you know, just throwing the ball up there like a bride at a wedding throwing her garter belt. Like, it was, you know, he's just flinging it into a crowd, and there were a couple of turnovers on it. And that's the thing sometimes. So they have been effective on the alley-oops, no question. For me, Celtics fans, like, what I'm talking about and what I'm going to say this: what you think Marcus Smart is and the impact he has, you saw it last night in Mike Conley. Mike Conley would be perfect for the Celtics. Now, he's nowhere near the defender that Marcus Smart is because he's undersized, but the way he orchestrated things down the stretch, he got those alley-oops for Rudy Gobert, but then when you needed him to make perimeter shots, he made it. And then when it was time to get the ball to Donovan Mitchell and get out of the way, he did it.
617-779-0985, couple open lines. You want to talk about last night's Celtics game, Chris's Marcus Smart column, what the Celtics ceiling is if they were to make that move. We'll get to more of those calls coming up next and give you a quick preview of tonight's game as they have the back-to-back against the Portland Trailblazers. Sports Hub Celtic Show, more coming up next.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. Sports Hub Celtics Show drives the lane.
No! Scored and the foul.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show and Boston's home for the Celtics. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Celtics Show, final segment here. Get some more of your calls just quickly on tonight's game. Celtics right back in action, second night of a back-to-back. Their road trip continues. They take on the Portland Trailblazers, who come in with a record of 11-12. They are lost their last game to the San Antonio Spurs, 114-83. Obviously, no Damian Lillard. So he was out for rest. I don't know if he's going to play tonight. I don't think so.
No, Lillard? No, he's out. He's out. He has an abdomen thing. He's out a minimum of 10 days.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And
I
then Anthony Simons is out, too. The Blazers website declared that he's out as well.
And what about Nasir Little? Because he was out with a sprained ankle in this loss to the Spurs. Is he going to be out as well?
I don't know off the top of my head. I know Simons is not going to play, and I know, obviously, Lillard. Dame won't play.
Yeah, so an undermanned Blazers team. So, you know, to echo what Brian Robb, Mass Live, said earlier, you know, so if you want to give a moral victory to the Celtics last night, I won't argue that. Even that's how I felt. I was like, yeah, it sucks that they lost, but that was an entertaining game, so fine. You lose tonight to this undermanned Trailblazers team? Oh, all right. Now you see
start... Little's out, left ankle sprain.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he's out as well, according to the Blazers' official Twitter.
And so, yeah, you look at last night differently, and that would be a bad loss tonight. As bad as like that loss to San Antonio last week, if you were to lose to this undermanned Trailblazers team this evening. So, but then, of course, you know, they still got some talent there. CJ McCollum, you know, he's going to get more, especially with Damian Lillard out. But you can catch tonight late with a tip-off at 10. You want to hear it here. It'll be after the Bruins game here with Sean Green and Cedric Maxwell here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. All right, more of your calls here. In fact, actually, let's go to Chris in Worcester, who wants to talk about tonight's game. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, great, thanks. Before Gasper, I'm sorry. Congratulations going back to the Globe. Looking forward to reading it. I'll pay the subscription. You're welcome. But I didn't realize. Are you done with CVB?
I'm no longer a full time employee there.
Oh, okay, well, I'll miss you on the Sundays, whatever.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you. But no, my point was to be Robin, and I agree. It was last night was a moral victory. Thank you, sorry. But tonight they have to win because I think Portland's changing their tune. They were so good, they just fired their GM. So I wonder if they're in a flux, and if you don't win tonight, you got to beat them. So the Portland feels like they're a little bit of a blown up team, and without Lillard and a lot of their players, you got to win tonight. And I love the Celtics.
Thanks Chris. Guys. Yeah, no, I mean, I think I agree. You know, second night of a back-to-back can be tough, but the way this sets up for the Celtics and all the pieces that are missing for the Blazers, man, I Chauncey Billups, he's having a little bit of a rough go of it there, first-time head coach with the Blazers, and I know he has Scott Brooks on his staff, who's a veteran guy, obviously, but when you look at some of the pieces that are missing for the Blazers and just the overall uncertainty about Damian Lillard's future there, I mean, you want to talk about a core that's maxed out. It doesn't get any more maxed out than what's happening right now in Portland.
Is there any update on Jaylen Brown? Obviously, he's still dealing with that hamstring. Didn't play last night. Is he? I don't know if I've seen any update as to whether or not they were going to play him tonight. I can't imagine it being the second night of a back-to-back. He looked like he was in a lot of pain at the end of that Sixers game the other night.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he was laboring. I know Ime said he thought it was really more of an ankle, a turned ankle, than the hamstring. But I'm just watching Jaylen Brown play, and you can tell that he is definitely favoring and protecting that hamstring. He just there's not the same explosiveness and suddenness to his game. It just sort of seems like, you know, he's like a sports car that's just sort of stuck in third gear. Like, you know, he won't put it into the higher gears because he's afraid he might just redline it and blow the thing, and then he's done. So he certainly is not. And that's really sort of the defense. You know, look, if you disagree with me on the Celtics, I think the biggest defense you have is like, well, hold on, let's see some more games with the primary principals healthy and even just a healthy roster in terms of the supporting pieces. I don't think it adds up. I think it's just a lot of tinkering, but I think that's your chief defense at this point.
B-Rob, you see anything on that? He going to play tonight?
So Ime said last night to us that it's going to be a game-to-game thing, so he'll probably test it out. But to Kerr's point, if you're the Celtics right now, you got two more off days coming up before the LA. Like, sit him tonight. You should be able to beat this Blazers team without him. Get him a week of rest. You need him right, because when we saw him back, he's just not good enough to help if he's at 80-85% right now.
Luke in Vermont, you're next here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hey, Luke.
Hey, guys. Give me a little bit of time, if you can,
to get
to the big picture. Last night, I mean, Chris, to criticize Smart by saying Conley's the type of player you need, the way he played last night, 7-for-7 from three, every team could use a point guard that never misses from three. Mitchell and Conley last night were 10-for-10 in the final 5 minutes. I mean, that's not who those guys are. 33s from deep. Last week, Mitchell was 2-for-12 from three in a loss to the Magic. 2 weeks ago, Conley was 1-for-4 with 6 total points against the Pacers. That might have been the greatest game in the history of that franchise, shooting-wise. That was unbelievable. For the Celtics to be without Jaylen Brown, bench Rob Williams, who's probably a top 4 player on their team, and be in the game with 2 minutes to go, I mean, last year, that's a 40-point loss. I give them a lot of credit for where they were last night in that game. And That was a great game. I would like to see them finish it. They didn't. I just don't think we can criticize them too much for it. And every win in the NBA is a good win. We see everybody lose to bad teams other than Phoenix and Golden State. So the Philly win, I like that win. I mean, Tatum had 11 points in the fourth quarter. Yeah, Embiid was bad, but so was Brown. So I get it. You guys are correct to say the team has been a middler for the last year. But I think if we're honest about it, I do think they're improving. It's not totally all uphill. There have been some setbacks, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. I just don't think there's enough. I think there's enough talent there to say that this team could compete in the Eastern Conference if they continue to trend in the right way. There's still things they need to tinker with. I would consider moving Schroeder to get a piece that fits better. I'm not saying it's perfect, but there's Eastern Conference middlers that don't have the ability to become something else. I think this group does have the ability to become something better.
Luke,
and if we're honest about it, go ahead.
What's your realistic seeding for them at the end of the year? Where do you think they're going to be?
Best case scenario, I think they're a 4 seed. And they have a chance to upset that 1 seed. I really think their ceiling, and I would like to see them make a move. I would like to see them use up that $17 million trade exception, get another piece. I want to see ownership invest like they want to win a championship. It's hard to talk about championships when you're not spending money like the other teams that are in the hunt. Let's put as much support around Tatum as Brown as possible. And there does need to be tinkering. I'm not saying I wouldn't move anybody. Everybody's movable outside of Tatum for me. But the group that's there is better than they've performed. And they're not Phoenix or Golden State where everything's already established. I think we need to give them time to work through this. And I think if we're honest about it, you have seen change. It's just not quick and instant like we would all hope. I get the criticism. I've criticized them this year, rightfully so. But I think if you're honest about it, you could be optimistic about this year.
All right, Luke, appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
So I'll just respond to this on the Conley thing. It wasn't the 7-for-7 from three, and I'll just point out, you know, he's shooting 47% from three this year, and he shot 41% last year from three. So he's become a better three-point shooter. It was the way he orchestrated the offense. He got those easy baskets for Rudy Gobert. He was knocking down shots, obviously, but it doesn't have to be 7-for-7. And then he got out of the way in terms of Donovan Mitchell. So that's what I'm talking about. It's not just one game, the 7-for-7 from three. I mean, go back to, you know, since he's really gotten to Utah, he's shot the ball pretty well from the perimeter, and he's able to orchestrate their offense. So that's what I'm saying. When you look at the Celtics, offensive rating, three-point percentage, assist ratio, not assist to turnover, but assist ratio. They're in the 20s in all of those categories. That's not a highly effective, highly efficient offense, which you would think with the players they have, they would be closer to.
But if he's talking about like little incremental improvements, defensively, they've gotten better.
Absolutely.
You know, so I would agree with him
there.
Dan in Weymouth, you're next here on the Celtics. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Gasper.
Hey.
Mr. Murray.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I love all your little metrics because I've worked in the financial world for a long time, and I would trade right now whatever they can, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, for a big center who can help out Al Horford, and I would never trade Marcus Smart because he has basketball IQ.
I'm going to let you go on that, Dan, as we wrap. I feel like it's almost kind of an antiquated position, unless you can maybe bring in a Karl Anthony Towns who can shoot the three.
I mean, again, or Anthony Davis. I don't know. Again, I understand. I appreciate the call. I respect it. I just think there's been a degree of sort of fetishizing what Marcus Smart does. And it is unique, and it is fun to watch. I acknowledge that. But I guess my overall question would be, do you think it ultimately translates to them being a championship team? And again, me saying move on from him is not, I'm not blaming him for everything that's happening. But when I look at the other options in terms of the core, right, I said break up the core. And there's three guys to me that are part of the core, really. And it's Tatum, Brown, and Smart. Why would you move one of the other two guys? And why would you do it without seeing if they can function better without Smart being around?
All right, we'll continue to mix in some Celtics calls if you want here in the last hour of Gasper and Murray. We're going to do the headlines here, give you an update on the Bruins heading into tonight's game. Doesn't sound like good news for Charlie McAvoy. Talk about that. So give you the update there, and also another Patriot player might be out ahead of Monday night's game as they're practicing, getting ready for the Bills on Monday. So we'll update you there and then get into the final hour of the show here at Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.